Welcome to University Matters. This is Patricia Camilleri, Director of Communications and Alumni Relations here at the University of Malta. In this series, I will be talking to academic staff about their research projects, their international networks, about their aims and aspirations. I shall also be hearing from staff and students and visitors to campus about the many events that take place here at the University of Malta. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio on University Matters, Professor Irene Shireha Aquilina. Professor Shireha got her BSc and MSc from the University of Malta and then went on to read for her PhD at Reading in the UK. She's now a professor in the Department of Mathematics in the Faculty of Science here at the University of Malta. Her main areas of research are in graph theory, linear algebra, and combinatorics. And she is particularly interested in graph spectra, the polynomial reconstruction conjecture, and applications to chemistry. Professor Shree has also done some work on outer planar graphs and group theory. Clearly, she is a regular contributor to international publications. And she's also a former chair of the Gender Issues Committee, and I had the pleasure of being on the committee when she was chair, and a member of the prestigious International Helsinki Group. Welcome to the programme, Professor Shreha.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Mathematics is a subject, not an area I have a really much knowledge about, but one thing I can say is that the older I become, the more interested I become in mathematics.
That's a good sign.
It's probably a bit late now to learn much more about it, but I must say the beauty of it
is really dawning on you.
Yeah, a little late in the day. Never mind. But today we're going to hear about some beautiful aspects of mathematics. And you've been on the program before, and I really enjoy listening to you speaking so enthusiastically about your subject. Perhaps you could start off by telling us about your new research interests.
Right. My main interest is basic mathematical research. I'm still very interested in that. But as part of the project that the University of Malta has with the University of Sheffield in England, the team headed by Professor Patrick Fowler and my team are collaborating, and we noticed that my research fits in very well with a new area now, electrical currents in single molecules. Can you imagine a million molecules placed next to each other and barely covering a 1 millimeter square with gold wire soldered at the two end points, and then we see whether current flows or not. Here we're talking about very small sizes. There's a buzzword these days, nanotechnology, and 1 nanometer is 10 to the minus 9 meters, which means 1,000 million nanometers make 1 meter. So you can imagine the large number of molecules you can put next to one another to obtain 1 meter. Right. So we started on this because we realized that the mathematics I had been doing in previous years fits in very well. And it, without realizing, I was identifying the shapes of molecules that would give you conduction or would block conduction. And this is exactly what was required in this area.
It's fascinating to molecules with a mathematician because in my ignorance, I would sort of associate molecules with the biologist, a molecular biologist, but not with a mathematician.
In fact, of late, there has been a concerted effort by governments, by nations, the US, the EU, Japan, to target research at the intersection of engineering, life sciences, and information technology. What they're trying to do is to see what the biological processes are in nature, in the body, and to see whether they can mimic them by producing electronic devices that do the same processes as the body. The computer scientists talk about neural networks, which would be a mathematical model, software, that would work as the human brain works. They haven't yet come to that, but there is a great deal of research on this. Governments call this biosensing, you know. They try to encourage mathematicians, people good at bioinformatics, at nanotechnology, at physics, chemistry, computer science, to collaborate together and complement one another to see whether they can bridge gaps in the various areas and to see whether one theory complements other theories and new breakthroughs are made. So there's much funding in that.
Obviously, you're saying governments are interested in making these connections. And one presumes that the reasons for this would be not just a sort of a love of international collaboration, but also because there's finance involved, industry is going to benefit, presumably, by the kind of networking that you're talking about. Is this interest, in fact, encouraged by industry?
Where companies see that a prototype, a device, can be made in the short term, they're very enthusiastic to fund the project. But then when there's mathematical research that doesn't have immediate application, but as I was telling you, as happened in my case, I realized after years that it could fit in exactly with what is being considered as cutting-edge research. Industry is a bit wary to, I don't blame them because they want immediate profits. However, governments shouldn't be short-sighted and, for example, treat the university and university research in that manner, according to my opinion, because if that would happen, where would philosophy go? In industry, or perhaps it does, and I don't know how, you know, I don't know the manner in which it does. In fact, what we're doing today was predicted by the famous Richard Feynman in his 1959 speech to the American Physical Society, they call it. It's the American Society of Physicists. He said, I see in principle that the computers we're using at this time, this is 50 years ago, which are huge, can be replaced by ones that are as big as my hand only and that could have the same power. And in fact, we went beyond that today. He even discussed very small circuits, which is what the research I'm doing at the moment. He said, when we get to the very, very small world, say circuits of 7 atoms only, we have a lot of new things that would happen that represent completely new opportunities for design. He said, atoms, and he's right, on a very small scale, behave like nothing on a large scale. So they don't conduct as our electrical circuits do. They have new rules, the rules that we call quantum mechanics and which our students study.
Yes, it's so amazing. The laws of physics sort of don't seem to apply to at the quantum level.
That's it. They change. And without realizing, my research was precisely identifying what experimental observations that are published, right? Experimental results that are published and do not have theoretical background. My theory was fitting in exactly with these to explain why these things happen. And that was very thrilling for me.
Of course, I can imagine. So you're saying that examining the current in a molecule could then be related to other fields, to things which had already been seen by scientists, but not necessarily explained.
You see, our molecules are carbon-based. Now, carbon is present in our cells, in the cells of our body. It's even present in the nucleic acids, making our DNA. In fact, an incredible discovery was that relates to these currents is the nanoswitch. It's a device that moves DNA fragments to enable sequencing, which is the decoding of the human genome, to see why our DNA is different from that of a mosquito. Apparently, there's very little difference, just a few genes that are different. You see, a biosensing instrument is being devised to process a person's DNA and assess the risk to certain diseases like cancers or viruses or toxins in food. So there's a lot of use already, but we envisage an explosion, just like the explosion we had in mobile phones, laptops. You see, industry is driving and pushing us to go smaller and smaller, just as Feynman said. And they're right. Why? Because there are many advantages for that.
So here we're talking nanotechnology, this word that everyone's sort of banding around.
That's it, the buzzword. And also biosensing, when we include what happens in the body, what happens in nature. So, what are the advantages? Since things are very small, there's a lower cost, there's more efficiency, there's less power dissipation, so the electricity bills will be less.
Always a good thing.
There's also this molecular recognition, it's called. You see, in our body, molecules that complement other molecules and lock together like a key in a keyhole could trigger, say, an electrical current. Also, there are what the chemists have been studying for years, optical isomers they're called, you know. They're usually colored substances, colored crystals. They're like our hands, you see. Our hands are the same, similar, but they're not the same. They're laterally inverted. And this happens with often with isomers in the carbon-based molecules. For example, this is how the retinal molecule works, you know, the retina at the back of our eyes. How do we see? Because when light hits our retina, it makes the retinal molecule switch between two stable structures. One receives the light, and the other structure produces a small electric current that tells the brain to see. So see how interesting these reactions are together, you know, these processes are. And we're trying, and engineers are trying, and scientists are trying to mimic them by producing gadgets that work that way.
And where does the maths come into this? You have to calculate what exactly to create these kinds of scenari?
The mathematics comes into explaining why a molecule that has, for example, certain energy levels, when in a circuit, has one energy level contributing and not the other. So mathematics decides these, and it decides the geometry, the shape of the molecule that would fit in. Without mathematics, chemists could, by chance, you know, hit on the right one. But with mathematics, I could tell them, you know, all these are possible. And they would tell me, but we know how to synthesize only three of them, and you're giving us thousands. But in principle, they could happen, as with what happened with fullerenes, you know. Fullerenes are forms of carbon that were discovered in 1985. Before, we used to learn, before 1985, that there are two forms of carbon, the diamond and the graphite that the pencils are made of. And they're very different. The diamond is very strong and the graphite very slippery, and that's why we can write. But in 1985, there were three scientists and two of their students, Croteau from Sheffield University, from where Patrick Fowler comes as well. They were given the Nobel Prize for this, and they had this experiment in vacuum. So they had this big globe, they had a disk of graphite that went round, and they shone laser light onto it, and this carbon vapor formed and was forced to a side by helium gas, which is inert, and they saw these balls forming, you know, for the first time. And these balls have the shape, they're all made of carbon, but the way that a carbon atom bonds to another carbon atom is exactly the way the seams of the football, our football, is. So, you see, this is was predicted much before, you know. We used to say these carbon atoms, molecules, are possible. However, we don't think they could be made, or we haven't found a way of making
them.
We
don't know why,
or how. And so this was quite an interesting discovery. And it triggered a lot of nanotechnology, in fact. One other interesting instrument that the inventors of this instrument gained the Nobel Prize for it, Binning and Rohrer from IBM in Zurich, is the scanning tunneling microscope. This resembles our old gramophones, you know. Do you remember how the gramophone pin used to rest lightly on a rotating disc and produce music? No, this scanning tunneling microscope is similar. It has this pin, conducting pin, metal pin, or it can conduct electricity, and it doesn't rest on a surface, but it's brought very, very near the surface, and it scans it in a zigzag fashion. And as it's passing on the surface, these sparks flow. The sparks are electrical circuits flowing through molecules in the space between the surface and the tip. So, and what happens is that the larger the current, the closer the tip is to the surface. And the different values of the current are converted to an extremely clear picture of the surface on a computer screen. So this, we're talking about atomic levels. So we see the various atoms, and we see how smooth a surface is or how irregular it is. As Feynman called his speech, there is much room at the bottom. That's what he said.
Still lots to do. Uh-huh. Hearing you speak, of course, you're talking about molecules, you're talking about nanotechnology, its engineering side. So many different applications are going to be used. Presumably, the mathematician buried in an office at the end of a very long corridor working on his or her own is probably not an option anymore.
They still exist, I can tell you. In fact, we're accused of staying in our ivory towers. When you don't see an application, it happened to me at the beginning of my career. I would have liked to see my mathematics applied, but I never found the exact niche where to enter. And actually, I have to give the tribute to Professor Fowler, who noticed during a conference while I was speaking that what I was saying fitted well with what he was doing. And we found structures of fullerenes, we found what we call nut graphs and core graphs and core fullerenes. And now this new idea of conduction and small molecules. You know, when I was telling my daughter what I was doing, she said, but it's simple. A piece of plastic doesn't conduct, a piece of metal conducts. I said, no, you have no idea of what I'm talking about, you know. So it all has to do with this very, very small scale. It's another level where laws change. You know, I read a very interesting definition of mathematics, which is mathematics is the language in which the book of nature is written. And how very true I'm saying today, because it explains, it has always explained a lot. We know the stories of Galileo and other scientists who, you know, were courageous enough to oppose current opinion. I saw the play The Enemy of the People lately, you know, Ibsen's play, and this is what happened to the doctor, who was saying our village is being ruined by the tannery where they produce leather, you know, because they're throwing toxins in our water, in our river. And however, the tannery was such a strong industry there that not even his brother, who was the mayor, supported him. And the it's very true that the one who speaks the truth and the new truth stands alone many a time. But then with time, maybe, if it's not too late, people are proved right.
Yes, it's all about having the right vision, I suppose. In the few couple of minutes that we have left, I would like to talk about your interest in gender issues. We mentioned at the beginning that you were a former chair of the university's gender issues committee, and also you're on the Helsinki group for women in science. First of all, do you find here that there are a lot of women interested in mathematics or good at mathematics? Is there any gender bias in our students? I don't have the numbers exactly in front of me right now.
In fact, I think more there are at the present. In my days, I was the only student in my course. But nowadays, I think I would not be mistaken to say that there are more girls than boys attending mathematics.
The problem is, I think, that they probably don't anticipate what they can use mathematics for, perhaps. Is this a problem for women in doing math?
It's a problem in general, you know. Students at sixth form come and ask us, you know. They say, what can I do with mathematics? But there are so many things you can do with mathematics. And it depends on what you do later, you know, whether you want to specialize further or whether you want to diversify and have mathematics as a background. Mathematics is a way of thinking. it's a way of, it's logic, you know. We have the advantage of not being shackled like the engineers are by requiring the exact bolt, cable, switch, you know, to make a circuit work. No, we just use our ideas. We're not even inhibited by very small, infinitesimally small dimensions or infinite dimensions. So I've seen mathematicians work as geologists, in academia. But let's forget academia. Could they work anywhere else? Yes, in hospitals. I've seen mathematicians become really important, let's say, engineers in a way, in the medical field abroad, you know, in hospitals abroad, where they manage a whole, all the instruments, you know. They don't really work on them, but they know what needs to be done for the engineers to do it, you know. And we teach them design. We teach them to think and to think logically, and that is what design is, you know. You design a way, a process of working. Coming back to women, you know, the Helsinki group, I want to say, promotes women researchers. It tries to nudge governments into promoting women, into producing the right environment for women who have talents to help the nation, after all, and to help the growing up generation, you know, to contribute. It's a pity to see a lot of talent wasted. And that happens because of circumstances. We all went through career breaks and suffered for that.
So the women need to be encouraged, even in Northern Europe, in Scandinavia. I mean, there still is a little bit, perhaps, need.
It's amazing that although they're so advanced there, right? We've seen this lately, you know, the EU has forced a larger maternity leave period on governments. And industry doesn't take kindly to these. I understand that to them, but they can cut this as an investment and not a cost. You know, if they keep the best people, I think it's an investment, not a cost. And this has been proved because women tend to work hard, to be diligent, to be loyal, to go out of their way. As much as men, or perhaps more.
Well, with that comment, I'd like to thank Professor Irene Srihakvilina for being with us on University Matters today.
Thank you for listening to today's programme. I do hope you can join us again next week for another in the series, University Matters on Campus FM. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.